Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Continental OE. T.S. You can find weird things in your car, not just petrified French fries or melted crayons, live snakes, weird, bizarre trinkets, stuff that makes you wonder, what the hell are folks thinking when they're driving? Anyway, you can also find Continental belts. Bet you didn't know they're OE in millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, BMW, VW, and GM vehicles. Continental is launching a new aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, fanatically engineered for a perfect fit, form and function for over 98% of vehicles on the road in the U.S. and in Canada. Continental OE technology series multi-V belt. The belt with the OE pedigree. Get the full story at OETechnologyseries.com. That's OETechnologyseries.com.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Adam Carolla and welcome to another episode of Going Racing, a show that highlights the fastest cars, best races, and biggest celebrities in the automotive world. And now, here's a conversation we had with IndyCar great Scott Dixon. We'll talk about the IndyCar series as well. Racing in the 24 hours of Le Mans. Scott, first, just because we're all up in Le Mans mode here, what did you drive at Le Mans? What class?
GT Pro, is it? GTLM? GT Pro, I think they call it there, because they're Pro and Am. So, but yeah. The 4 GT. There was their resurrection of the 50th anniversary from 16.
Come on, Max Pata, that's a big car for us.
4 GT.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you drove when they brought it back in, well, 16. Was it 16 is when they brought it back?
16 was the first year back.
And they brought three cars. And
Four
cars. Yeah. Who was on your team? Who was on in your car with you?
So there was the UK team and then the American team. Right. I was on the American team with Ryan Briscoe and Richard Westbrook. And then the other car was, I think, Dirk Muller, Joey Hand, and Sebastian Bourdais was in the other American car. So they actually won the race. We were third.
Yeah, well, that holds. So, we got that worked out.
Yeah.
That GT, so I've heard through discussing with, was I talking to Frank Keady about that?
Yeah,
maybe.
I think so. At Goodwood, I think.
Yeah,
I was talking to him about it.
I would have been him.
The deal is back in the day, you could drive a Ford GT in the 60s at Le Mans.
but you couldn't drive it at 10 tenths. It would break, you know, and I've talked to those guys. Like I talked to Dan Gurney about how to save the brakes at the end of Le Mans. He'd be like, I put that thing downshifted into, I don't know, third and just let the car slow itself, like stay off the brakes, you know? So it's like, obviously Dan Gurney is talking to me about not going that hard. You know, if it was a half hour sprint, he'd be on it, but he's not. So you guys have more comfort and more technology and more safety, but you have to drive. Now you can drive the car 10 tenths for 24 hours. Is that a correct statement?
It's a 24-hour sprint race. It is. Right. It's flat out. It's very tough. You know, and back then there was two drivers, right? Not. You know, I think now the maximum you can have is three, or you have to have three because you have. Yeah. I think you can only drive for a maximum of 4 hours in a six-hour window or something like that. But it's hard now. It's flat out. And then this category too in GT Pro. It's big fields, you know. You're talking, that was for the outright win in the 60s, obviously 66 right. through 69 mm-hmm. or whatever they win. They won four in a row. But, you know, now it's a class of about 18 or 20, which is probably the most difficult class. The prototypes now are really, well, it's only been Toyota for the last 2 years. And then prototype two, which is a pretty tough class as well. But it's a great race. You know, I was lucky to go with Chip Ganassi Racing, the same team I race with in IndyCar. So it made it a very easy transition and to go to Le Mans for the first time. Our team did win with the sister car coming in first, and we came in third. So it was definitely for the 50th anniversary to go back and win was astonishing.
Yeah, and what a great car to drive in that event. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It's cool to drive a Vette. It's cool to drive a 911, but it's better to drive the Ford GT.
But you've done Le Mans a few times just in the Ford GT?
So I've only been part of the Ford program, yeah. So it's, you know, that was the last race this year for that effort.
Yeah.
So, you know, it will be interesting to see. You know, there's the category is changing a lot, right? You know, the World Endurance Championship and also the ACO, they've brought in the new hypercar, which will start next year, I think, with Toyota, and then also Valkyrie with the Aston Martin. So it's an interesting transition, but they've tried to, you know, the budgets were $200-300 million a year when Porsche and Audi and all them were going at it with Toyota, whereas now they're trying to, you know, crush that down to around $30 million a year. So I think they'll have a big influx of other manufacturers, which will get it back to where it should be.
So you're saying the Aston Martin Valkyrie is going to race in the GT category?
No, that'll be in the hypercar. So that will be what's known now is for the outright win for prototype class. Yeah.
The hypercar class will have what makes and what vehicles in it?
So I think at the moment, the only two that have signed up is the Toyota hypercar, which they've already started running. I think I saw some clips like maybe on YouTube or something, and then the Valkyrie. That's it at the moment. But then, you know, I think McLaren's meant to be coming in, BMW.
Seems like they would have
there's a ton. Ford, I think, are even looking at it as well.
Do they? I'm trying to picture a hypercar. I'm trying to picture a Toyota hypercar.
Yeah.
I can't physically picture it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it is. And I
pretty interesting.
Do they have to homologate
I know what the Valkyrie looks like.
I know what the Valkyrie looks like too, but they've made street versions of it or versions of it.
They're supposed to.
It's going into production, the Valkyrie, But I think they're going back to kind of the old school rules maybe of going to a production of at least 25 cars.
Yeah, so it looks... Yeah. Right. It
just looks like a race car.
Right. I tend to like these. I don't like when cars become sort of futuristic space traveling machines. Like, I don't even really like the aesthetic of F1 anymore. It's like the aesthetic in the 70s was so great, you know, with Elf and John Player Special and Ferrari. Big barrel tires in the back, smaller in the front.
Yeah. Lots now, of
this is why we were talking about like Goodwood Revival and stuff when we were doing the other show.
And the hypercars have brought it back a little more toward what a car looks like versus the GTP stuff or the LM whatever stuff that looks just sort of crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I think a lot of people were hoping they were going to go back to maybe GT1 spec where, you know, it would be like a Ford GT, but, you know, the unfortunate part of the balance of performance that everybody races in that category now is that, you know, the road car has almost, I don't know, 700 horsepower, but the race car has only 500 horsepower.
Yeah.
Right.
They're so detuned that it's just, you know, I don't know which is the limiting factor. I think it's the Porsche or the Corvette, you know, and everybody gets detuned to that spot that everybody has, you know, basically the same speed. So going to the GT1 spec, I think, would have been quite exciting. But obviously, they've gone down the road of the hypercar, which will be interesting. Yeah.
Well, the Porsche, they're probably going down to the Porsche if the Porsche's not running a turbo,
and
it's a flat, naturally aspirated six.
Yep.
They're not going to get more than 500 horsepower out of that engine. They're just not going to with the displacement it has. And I'm sure the vet
and endurance
could get
horsepower.
It. But also, why not give a turbo, let the Porsche run a turbo, bump it up to 750 horsepower, whatever. You can get whatever you want once you put a turbo in there, because the Ford is a six-cylinder, but it's running turbos, and it can make whatever it wants as well. Either way.
Yeah, it's an interesting category, because the Porsche is not even a 911, right? I think it's on a Cayman chassis. So they went to a mid-engine because they needed to add the rear diffuser, whereas on the 911 you couldn't add a rear diffuser.
Oh, yeah.
So there is some strange configurations out there.
I don't know.
But,
we need to talk to Patrick Long, I think, a little more about that, right?
He would know exactly. Yeah. I'm probably not meant to say something like that, because it's not really a car.
But it doesn't exist in a factory form, but
it's starting to stretch.
It's not unlike my 79 Datsun 280ZX twin turbo car that's in the next shop. It's got a V8 in the front of it. There's no manufacturer.
It didn't come that way.
And it's got two turbochargers. And so it's like, how do you get that across the governing body where you're driving a car that doesn't exist and you're going, no, it's a Japanese V8 in there. And it's like, I know, but nobody ever made this car. Bob Sharp told me, Bob Sharp said,
Bob Sharp.
Because all the, hi, this is Bob Sharp. I answer the phone like this. Hello?
Hello?
Who is this? What do you want?
What?
He just goes, hi, Bob Sharp here. He's a car salesman, you know. If I called Bob Sharp right now, he'd answer his phone. Bob Sharp.
Bob Sharp.
So I said to Bob, he's like, all the 935 Porsche guys were all pissed off when we brought this car out, because it's got a V8 and 933 horsepower and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, well, they had a point, you know, because they're running engines that come in their cars and you're not. And he's like, I told him, relax. I said, Paul put this thing on the pole at like Pocono.
Yeah.
And if Paul wins the race, then we can have another discussion.
Yeah,
but right now, he hasn't run the race. He's on the pole, but he hasn't won anything yet. And then if he wins, we can have another meeting. Right now, as far as I can tell, we got all this press out here because Paul put this car on the pole. So you're welcome. And he left.
He's what a marketer. Such a salesman.
And then the car broke. And then they didn't have to have another meeting.
Nobody bitched about it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Fantastic.
So, Scott, you're going this Sunday is the Indy in Toronto.
That's right.
Trying to think of, I don't think I've been on that track. We've never been on that track, have we?
No.
Indy.
That's fun, man.
Which track is it?
It's a street race, so it's downtown.
Oh, it's a street race.
Yep.
I was just trying to think where a track would be in Toronto.
I don't even know the first year, but I know it's been running since the 90s, but it's gone through some changes over the years as a lot do. But
how many races now in the series are the street race versus the oval?
I think it's maybe 12 and 5 or something like that. So there's maybe only 4 or 5 ovals. You know, it has changed a lot. I think when I first came into IndyCar in the early 2000s, it was maybe 50-50. And same with Indy Lights back in those days too. So it has gone more road course based, you know, throughout.
Yeah.
It seems... I don't know. What's more challenging, a street course or an oval?
They both are. They're just so different. You know, I think you're mentally an oval, especially, you know, like maybe the Indianapolis 500, you know, the speeds are so high, the car is so light on downforce, it's moving around constantly. It's just mentally after that 3-hour race, you are drained because, you know, one, you've got the cars running around at the same time at very high speeds. You know, you're confined by concrete walls and fences that can be, you know, shredders and things like that. So it's street course is a lot more physical, you know, because it's bumpy. It's, lots of braking, you know, shifting, the acceleration, is pretty intense. So, you know, they're just so different. But that's what I love about IndyCar racing is that it's so diverse. You know, you do short track ovals to super speedways like Indianapolis to street courses in Toronto to road courses. You know, I think Mid-Ohio is next up on the road course list. So.
Right. All different. And not only is the street course are bumpy, but there's no camber in any of the turns. Some of them are like off camber and stuff. Yeah. You have to figure out a lot of stuff.
Sears Point is the one you're not a huge fan of.
Well, Sonoma.
Yeah, Sonoma.
Infineon. Whatever.
I don't know what they call it now.
No, it's technical. Yeah. Hey, you got to figure that track out a little bit.
Like I went around it in a, I don't know, it was a Ferrari Challenge. Went around it up there, and it seemed bumpy.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Like it's an older circuit for sure. Like it's probably due for a bit of an update. We don't go there anymore. Our last race at Sonoma was last year, but I don't know. It's a hard track, much like Laguna Seca is, and the fact that it's quite low grip, so the car slides around a lot. There's a lot of elevation changes, so it's really hard to pick your marks or over crests and things like that, so it's easy to catch you out. And the thing that I always found so frustrating with Sonoma was that kind of in the afternoon the wind would shift, the track would totally change, then all the dry dust would be on the track, and you'd be setting up for qualifying times or getting ready to go, and you'd go out and you'd be like a second slower, so it's definitely a track that with the heat and wind changed a ton. But that's, I think, just due to
it's amazing how so much of that can affect.
That's huge,
because you guys are just so at the limit the whole time. The slightest little, like is it change in weather? Something.
And well,
just
certainly
wind.
Any dust on that track is just complete game
talk
changer.
About a real game changer.
It's funny, like growing up when I did junior categories or even go-karts, you never really thought about the weather much but track temperature now just, one, the engine doesn't perform as well, because they're so highly stressed now that any kind of, adjustment with the ambient condition really hurts it, or, the tires just... once they get hot, it's just are no good, So it is one of those things that, growing up, you never really thought too much about. But for us now, going into a qualifying session, you're constantly looking at the weather, what wind direction, even for gearing now, you're changing gears on a road course by, less than 100 RPM to make sure you had the right gear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have questions about gears. I will say that doing a Trans Am race a couple of years ago, the tires, when they're cold, are like used. I just spun right off the track in this Corvette, just barely blipped the throttle. It was like, boom, went right off. But then later on in the race, they were too hot, and they got all marbly, and they're sliding all over the place. Yeah. And it went from, cold, worthless, hot, worthless.
Yeah.
It's kind of like there's a kind of a sweet spot in the middle, which works really well. And once you get under it or past it, there's failure.
That's why every vintage race is like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because those cars are
expensive. Right in that window.
In that nice one. You get a few laps in that window.
Yeah, big slick tie when it's cold is not a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
First, I'll tell you about J.B. Weld. Big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. It's got the word ordinary in it. You need something strong. You need something better. You need J.B. Weld. We're proud to have J.B. Weld Epoxy Adhesive as a sponsor. I use it at home. I use it in the garage. I use it in the shop. I use it in the studio. I use it everywhere. J.B. Weld. Put it in your toolbox, kitchen drawer, craft room, and now they make everything. They made pretty much like a two-part epoxy metal repair product that I use in the garage way back in the day. And now they make everything, and it's all good, and it's all made in the USA. Metal, wood, plastic, whatever you want, whatever you need to put together. Don't glue it. JB Weld it. Available at jbweld.com. Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Napa Auto Parts, and more. So, Scott, let's talk gears for a second.
We're going to get technical.
The IndyCar you drive is paddle shift
now. Paddle shift, yeah.
does it blip the throttle for you on the downshift?
It does.
Okay. It does. Give me one of those steering wheels or put it on my 510.
Is there a clutch in it? Do you use the clutch to get out of the pit like first gear and then paddle only? Or
So the clutch is pedal too. So there's only two pedals, you know, just your accelerator and brake, big pedals right at your feet. But then you have a clutch pedal either side, or you can do any configuration you want, really. And then you have, you know, right and left for up and down. But it does everything for you. That's why we always joke if, you know, something looks wrong in the data, I'll be like, you know, talking to my teammate, I'll be like, man, it looks like you missed a shift, you know. But of course, you can't do it. It's all controlled. Yeah.
You can not shift at all, but
it's still a big, you know, you're trying to look for that perfect seamless shift that the manufacturers are constantly chasing. And you know, with the configuration of the IndyCar now with their gearboxes, it's still very hard to get a very smooth shift.
The power plant. Matt and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, not in preparation for this. we just talk about stupid car stuff. And you were online and you were looking at the Indy power plant. Honda and – are there two?
It was GM.
Honda GM. GM were the engines in the –
What is it was a small displacement, right?
Like
2.2 liter
in a V6. So that's a small displacement in a V configuration.
Absolutely, yeah.
So high RPM.
Mm-hmm. They limit those a little. Like it's about, I think it's 12,000 RPM. I think
that's high.
Or 12.5. Yeah.
Well, that's super high. I mean, in a V configuration,
and they limit it for the car or like per track.
No, it's for durability, right? You know, gone are the days where we would have four engines a weekend. Now we have four engines for a whole season. So they have to reach, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 miles each engine. So I think it's to try and help those, you know, costs. And it never really does, though. You know, the durability goes through such a transformation, and the materials and metals and stuff they use, I think a lot of time end up costing them more. So
there's always a way to spend money in racing.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Not
they
a lot of save money.
Do they have a diameter intake on the throttle body or something? I mean, what governs the horsepower?
Boost.
Oh, boost.
Yeah, boost and displacement.
So
everything else is pretty open.
Twin
and
turbo,
your RPM.
2.2, 12 or 12.5 on the RPM, and then they let you run X amount of bar or pounds. What is it, 17?
But then you got the fun button, the cheat button.
Overtake.
Yeah,
I think it's I think
or 13 pounds. What is it?
They
bar talk, per
they
pound.
Talk,
14.7.
Yeah, I knew. And Matt's good for one thing and one thing only. When you can't figure out pounds, the bar, and the boost, he jumps in and saves the day. So you run how many bar or pound?
I think we use KPA. I don't know what.
Oh no!
Sorry,
damn it!
There must be a conversion. Where's that?
What is
KPA to boost to bar? What's the turbo pressure in KPA?
It's probably some Newton thing or something
See, now it doesn't make any sense.
Now it's one more thing for Matt to remember.
Yeah. Damn it!
But yeah, I think
we don't use that because I learned 14.7 from flying.
Oh, so I was wondering
KPA
why you knew
was
something.
Like, we don't do that.
You knew it. You're right. So I'm a pound guy, but then the Porsche I have has a bar boost in there. Yeah. And
I see,
can do the math.
I see one bar equals 100 KPA.
Oh, so there you go. It's just the final.
So 14.7 pounds is 100 KPA.
I guess so. Well, that's
easier. Sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Metric, they're smart in the
metric. So we're 150 KPA on road courses, but the overtake is 165 KPA, I think.
So you're 20-something, 21 pounds.
Overtake kicks it up to
165, I think.
How do they monitor that, or how's that regulated?
So it's regulated by an electronic boost sensor on the plenum. Mm-hmm. Which is controlled by IndyCar, and then if it goes over it, then you get an overboost, which then limits the engine. It reduces. Actually, it just puts in a hard limiter. So you sit on the hard limiter for maybe 3 seconds, and then it takes it out again.
How long can you use it for? a race. You can use it as many times as you want or whenever you want during a race.
I wish you could use it as many times. Well, you can,
but
in theory.
To like up to whatever. It's like,
so it's a timed event now. So you get 200 seconds on some of the bigger circuits and 150 seconds on some of the shorter ones.
But 150 seconds you can use in any
in whichever way you want,
whenever you want.
It used to be
because I saw Fast and Furious 1 and he was always like too soon, Junior.
That's right.
Hits the nitrous button at the end.
And you know, I always thought the Mazda RX-7 was a unibody car, but the floorboards came unscrewed.
Just right out of there.
They used diamond steel for the floorboard.
Diamond plate, no
carpet. Came
carpets.
Unscrewed. Because, you know, when you're working on an RX-7 and you want to get to the ground, but you can't figure out how to get to what's under the car, you got to take that plate off so you can access the floor.
There must have been 13 screws that came out of that thing. Like, not one nylon nut on there, just one to hold it in place.
Yeah, put a lock washer on there.
Just a dab of
Loctite.
But the overtake used to get 10 for 15 seconds. So it was annoying if you pushed it or accidentally hit it, and it would run out 15 seconds. And some people would do it under caution. You know, you'd be talking on the radio, you'd maybe hit the overtake, and it would just, you know, bleed off all that time, which was totally annoying. But now it's controlled.
The 150 seconds that you get, I mean, is there an indicator?
Somebody's keeping track
for you,
right?
Information on the
wheel. You know, you go to
it's
hit it, it doesn't work.
It's all on the wheel.
You're like, damn.
Yeah, you can put whatever you want now, and I think you have up to 8 pages of data that you can look at on your
screen. Do they scroll down from 150 seconds down, so it goes that direction, kind of makes sense.
But I guess you can go, you can do whatever you like.
And it's there for, and you could set it up to go up or go down.
Yep.
It's an interesting sort of...
I feel like the Whittington brothers kind of did that.
The Whittington brothers,
with their
Porsche 935.
And their secret nitrous kit.
Oh, yeah. the only problem is everybody else gets it, too.
Yeah, it's everybody else gets it.
It's an interesting process because, like, when you're driving a car and it's got a bunch of gauges on it, like sometimes there's some weird gauge that's like, you know, manifold pressure or something. Like, I don't want to look at that. Like, I want to look at the temp. I want the temp, the oil temp, the water temp. You know, I just put a piece of tape over some stuff because I don't even want it there. Like, why is it there?
Decoration.
When we drove that. If that goes bad, it's going to break anyway. So
we drove the Trans Am vet. Remember when I came in, like after qualifying, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this dash.
Like, I can't
see anything on this dash. And he's like, guy goes, oh, you had it in pit mode.
Oh,
and I didn't have it in any mode. I've never even touched it.
I've never even been in the car until now.
You left it in pit mode and put me out on a track. I don't know what gear I'm in or what my RPMs are. And he's like, well, you got to put it into track mode. I'm like, oh, what do you think I'm going to do? Like, start grabbing buttons on this thing?
That happens all the time in the Ford GT because even the mechanics and engineers have setup pages, right, that you have to scroll through. But then you get in the car and you go out and you're scrolling through tons of pages to try and get to you need.
Yeah.
But even in the IndyCar, the Indy 500 this year, I got into it in practice and you know, you scroll through the pages to get more information. And they'd actually put a picture of a sheep on mine.
Leave
you can
notes
put pictures, you can put videos on there, you can put all kinds of stuff. So I had a very lovely sheep on mine, which was interesting.
That's not distracting at all during practice.
I worked with one guy from New Zealand named Fraser. He actually gave me Vegemite in his camper van, but I thought Vegemite, people think Australia, but it must be big in New Zealand too.
Yeah, so Vegemite and Marmite, that's always the debate. But I think Marmite is maybe, I don't know. New Zealand might be more Marmite. Vegemite is more Australian maybe. I don't know. But there's always a big debate between the two.
This guy, Fraser, he was nuts in a fun way, but like nuts. And I sort of went, he was fun. Like, I'll tell you how nuts this guy Fraser from New Zealand was. We were doing earthquake rehab on a building downtown. And at some point, there was some old lady named, like, Millie. And she was celebrating her 90th birthday. And she'd been in this building since they built it in, like, 1921 or something. And so they're like, we want to gather everybody up in front of the building with Millie and the crew and everybody, and we'll take a picture with this 90-year-old woman in front of this building she's lived in her whole life. Now, I felt bad for her because it's a little shitty apartment. Like, I've lived here my whole life. Like, okay. Yeah. What if I never moved out of my
top floor
parents' house? Like, yeah, it's a little shitty room. But anyway, we all gathered around out front. They're like, come on, everyone, get in, stop your work, gather up. And we got everyone around. And the guy got like on a ladder and he got a camera and he was like, go, move in. And Frazier stood in the middle. He put his arm around Millie, and then he let this colossal fart go. And everyone's like, God damn it, Frazier. Oh! And everyone just cleared out, and they never came back. We never took the picture with Millie.
Oh, really?
And was that's how nuts this guy was. But he's like, I'm from New Zealand. I'm nuts. Yeah. We're all nuts. Oh. But fun nuts.
Fun nuts.
But fun nuts. And then I'm from North Hollywood, so I'm like, well, everyone from New Zealand is fun nuts. Is that a fair statement?
That is probably a good statement and very true. You got to go down to New Zealand. Like it's an amazing spot.
It's a great big muscle car collection. Yeah, a lot of car guys.
There's so much racing history. You know, if you look at the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, with Bruce McLaren, Chris Amon, you know, Denny Holm, there was a whole lot of history, especially through that period. So growing up, that's all racing.
It's funny. I mean, it's crazy when you take a look at some of that V8 action over there. Yeah. Like, if you ever take a deep dive, I think, if you take a deep dive on the internet, to like 70s V8 New Zealand Australian racers, those guys were going at it like maniacs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're going nuts with those cars
on
those tracks, like crazy. Like, it's really intense and hairy and dangerous looking, man.
Just raw, you know, and
raw,
and that's what it was really about, you know, and you know the tracks were too, you know. If you came off or slid off, you know, there was consequences, man. You hit like a big grass bank or something, you know, it was gonna knock you about.
You had parents that were racers?
Yeah, my dad
got into it.
Yeah, raced you know, a mixture of things, whether it was rally cars or you know, saloon cars, to, you know, a bit of go-karting and a bit of everything. Mum did a little bit of dirt racing when they owned a speedway actually in Townsville, in Australia, when we moved over there for a period in my younger life.
What track did your dad own?
My dad owned Orange County International Raceway, Button Willow, Willow Springs, and Thermal. No. dad owned an apartment in North. Oh, he didn't own an apartment. No,
he rented an apartment in
North Hollywood.
Yeah, talking with that 90-year-old woman as his roommate.
So, no, this was a very small dirt track that they kind of owned for a period of years and then later, you know, sold on. But, I don't know. Those were my best memories, man.
Aren't the Millens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Millen brothers.
So Steve Millen came in here and we were like, what's it like racing in Australia? And he got so mad because he's from New Zealand.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm from New Zealand. I was like, I know. We don't really know much of the difference here. Which one is Eric Bana from? Because he likes to race.
He's Australian.
He's Australian.
Yeah.
So we won't mention him then.
Yeah. Oh, because he did that documentary, right? It was The Beast or whatever it was.
Yeah,
was,
but he was here a while back, and Adam took him over to see the
He was, God, I was going to say, I was sort of calling his Beast like a Chevelle, but I don't know what it was in Australia, like a Mad Max 15 or something.
Yeah.
Like he had Eric Bana's V8. In Australia was a...
Is it like a Holden or a
Probably
Falcon
like a
something?
Holden. Yeah. I imagine...
Yeah, I don't even remember what it
we
was.
We just took some American cars, and here they called them a Chevelle, and there they called it a Holden or something.
Well, the Holden is kind of the Chevy of Australia, I guess. I don't know. Chris might be able to find
it is,
what car
it is.
What was Bana working on the whole time? The Beast, I guess, is the story of him... And constant
that
rebuilding
car,
and upgrading and whatever his car.
I don't know. Ford Falcon.
Oh, it's a Ford Falcon.
Ford Falcon. Yeah, there you
yeah.
go. Yeah.
74.
And then he crashed it, right?
I don't even know if we were making Ford Falcons out here in the 70s or 74. I feel like that's a 60s car.
We had them
stopped.
We had them in the 60s. And you're right. I think after the Mustang.
When did Ford stop making the Falcon in the United States?
Oh, that's funny because that car looks like a Mustang, right? It looks like a 74-ish kind of...
Yeah, it's a Gran Torino-looking kind of car, Bana. But anyway, muscle, V8,
Looks like a lot of fun.
New Zealand, Australia. I don't abide by sticking with one car and working on it your whole life.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about women. I feel like you got to move on to the next model every year. And when I say model...
No, I don't mean model year.
Yeah. You move on to the next model.
I've been trying.
All right.
So the Ford Falcon in North America was from 1960 to 1970.
Right.
And in Australia, it was 1960 to 2016.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. They don't know when to let it go, man.
I think Holden was the same, right?
Yeah,
which was a GM version of it, and they just kept running the Holden. I don't even know. There was many versions, but...
Yeah. Then they brought us to the Pontiac GTO here.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the, 2000, 2004, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
But it was the Holden that was doing well there, and it came here, and it didn't do well.
It didn't do well at all.
But it was kind of a sporty...
It was a two-door,
But it was kind of a sleeper muscle car, you know. It had the good engine and stuff in it, but kind of...
But I will, I'll say that, when Ford brought back the Thunderbird, that was like, all right, swing and a miss.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Yeah. When they brought back the GTO, I saw a few of those, and the specs and the looks, and everything, like, that's a pretty cool piece.
Yeah, and they could be fast. I'm sure Ken Ligonvillar has 9 of them.
That he got from Meekum and Kissimmee.
All
right, let me hit JB Weld for big or small repair projects, home or garage. You need JB Weld. You need something that lasts. We don't like to use the household glues because that's not industrial grade. We use JB Weld around here. They have you put it in your toolbox, put it in your kitchen drawer, you put it in your craft room. Good for metal, wood, plastic, and more. Made in the USA, where we stopped making the Falcon in 1970 because we knew better. Pros and DIYers have trusted JB Weld for more than 50 years. I always used to do the JB Weld for the metal repair, but now they're doing all kinds of epoxies and all kinds of crazy glues and polyurethane that doesn't foam up those other. I hate that foaming glue.
There's a box in the room, and I walked in. They said you counted everything in there.
I weighed
just to make sure.
I didn't count it.
I waited.
I didn't want
case
people
one missing.
Yeah, because they could use a few drops of the crazy glue and put it back.
Oh yeah.
I said no way, man.
No way.
Your sunglasses break, that's on you. Fix it at home. Available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, everywhere else as well. It's JB Weld, world's strongest bond.
Yeah.
So, Scott, how do you, if they change the configuration of the track at Toronto, how are you so consistently successful on that track?
I think most of it stays the same, right? Like the last few years, the last four corners have changed a bit. But, I think our street course cars have been very good. So, they typically, a Long Beach setup or a St. Pete setup to a Toronto are just, close variations. Long Beach is always kind of its own unique thing. And then Detroit kind of is too, just because of the surface. I don't know. I think Toronto is...
Sheer talent.
It's a team effort, man. It's a team effort. And the car's always been good there. But it's also... it's a short track. There's a lot of action going on. I feel it suits my driving style quite a bit, and trying to generate that tire heat, which I think is always is a big thing that you need to do at Toronto.
Do you have anything, I don't want to call it a bucket list, but maybe I did, but you have a list done Le Mans, other events, I don't know, Pikes Peak or... You tell us a vintage race at the Goodwood track in a saloon car, or you want to get back to that V8 Australian New Zealand type of driving.
And we talked about Classic Le Mans, which is next year.
Classic Le Mans.
Yeah. You got to come to that. It's in July maybe.
We're planning. We're trying to get everywhere, but you tell us. Are there things you're thinking about?
So Le Mans, still would love to win Le Mans. I think I've been lucky enough to win Daytona a few times. Le Mans is still one of those major events that you want to win outright, especially, which is tough, especially with manufacturers these days and trying to cross between.
And to win outright now, you got to be in the crazy
really
prototype.
Exactly. Bathurst 1000 for sure is one that I almost. had an opportunity to do it, you know, this year, but it actually conflicted with Petit Le Mans that we have in Atlanta with the last race for the Ford GT. Yeah. So we couldn't do that this year. Going to try and do Bathurst 12-hour, which comes up in February. Another one you guys should try and get to is Rod Millen, as we were talking about, mm-hmm. the Millens,
yeah.
has the Leadfoot Festival, which is in New Zealand, which is kind of a smaller version of Goodwood Festival. And yeah. you run up his driveway, and it's a fun event too. So
yeah.
I've been lucky enough to do a ton of great and exciting events, but Le Mans, Bathurst, you know, those are definitely the ones right at the top.
You need a big driveway. We need a driveway.
Yeah, there we go.
I did not know about Daytona. What were you driving? Were you driving the GT at Daytona?
So, yeah, the last 4 years have been the GT, the Ford GT. Previous to that, I think my first race at Daytona was maybe in 2004 with Scott Pruitt and mm-hmm. Max Pappas, and that was a sure. Toyota, I think. But then my first win came with Toyota at Daytona with Dan Weldon, the late Dan Weldon, Casey mm-hmm. Mears.
Sure.
And then a few years later with Ford, actually, a couple of times with the Ford GT and then the DPI program before that. So, yeah.
We love Max Pappas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
He's a
yeah.
fun guy.
He's a big
guy.
Personality, man.
He's a big personality.
It seems like only yesterday we're going down Shoreline at the Toyota Grand Prix, and he yeah. was banging my car yeah. from behind.
Yeah.
We're flat out. He's kind of bumping me.
It's sad that you were in the way. Celebrity race is gone now. That was yeah, good to watch. That last one, though,
now.
Was crazy. I thought they were going to kill somebody in the... Oh, do you remember that big crash in, like, turn 8 or whatever?
Yeah, because
the last race, they qualified, and then they're like, it's last race. For fun, we're going to flip the order.
Oh, well.
So yeah. everybody in the
that
fast
always works
in the back,
well.
And they just... yeah. And that race, everybody just kind of bangs their way through the yeah. lineup, you know, yeah. so they kind of yeah. it's yeah, it's
well,
always
they,
carnage.
They pulled a piece of safety equipment on the track
yeah.
without stopping the race, yeah. which is like, I don't know why you'd want a tow truck out there. It's everything that sort of
it was Brett Davern, I think, and then somebody hit his car when they were getting him out of it.
Whenever anything goes wrong, it's always like a confluence of sort of bad coincidency yes.
yeah.
things like
yeah.
first off it was around turn 7 or 8
when
I
yeah, eight,
you
eight.
Know you
yeah.
know it was around turn 8 turn 8 is blind yeah. you can't see yeah. past it then everybody was like the yellows didn't mean shit because yeah. here's what would happen if you stopped racing during a yellow they just pass
somebody
you
else
and
pass
everyone you. Just kept racing so nobody slowed down on any big waving yellows everyone's like fuck it I'm not slowing down Max Pappas is going to catch me if I slow down
you, yeah. and so start bumping you
everyone went around this corner and I went around it too and was like, oh shit, there's a car there. And then, oh, I mean.
That car was so lucky.
Oh my gosh. That guy, it was home. We were just watching like, the
video.
Did he
break his leg or not?
No,
he was okay.
He was okay.
He just jumped in the air like a cat and just, he was wow. like, he was fine. But they were watching the cars come yeah. around and yeah. they're like, why is nobody slowing down? Where's the yellow?
Well,
that's because
the professionals normally slow down, right?
There's a third. Yeah, so it's a blind corner.
Yeah.
Everyone ignores the yellows. Nobody, by the way, what everyone's figured out is when they tell you something like, you know, like in the past, it'd go like the pros start 30 seconds behind the celebrities and anyone who jumps the gun is going to be, it's like, fuck it,
yeah,
do
yeah.
it, go. Because everyone figured out
yeah,
no one
like
ever does anything.
Restart.
Here's your punishment. You get to get drunk earlier after this race with the guy yeah. told you not to do that. Like,
exactly.
We will pull you off yeah, this yeah. course. You will be black flag. And then yeah. the race starts. It's like, oh, fuck it. Yeah, everyone's yeah, just racing.
Okay.
So that's what everyone figured out. And then, whoever ran Brett Davern's car was
yeah.
right on the bumper
oh
of a guy
couldn't
who
see.
Saw
yeah.
it. He pulled out, and that's just been the scariest 0.3 seconds ever because he just pulled yeah. out and just was staring at the back of a car.
It yeah. kind of makes you wonder why they stopped doing that race.
Jeez. I feel like they're going to bring it back. Obviously, I don't think Toyota's going to bring it back. But
no, well, it'd be accurate now if it's
yeah,
accurate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It was always like for us, you know, it would always be right before qualifying or something. We'd be sitting in the engineering truck and we would have it all on the screens
yeah.
watching this race because the race was always very good to watch,
yeah.
you know, with the mix of, you know, amateurs and pros. And
it is entertaining.
It's entertaining.
And actually, you bring it up, it would be kind of interesting. I know it's accurate, but it would be great to see a bunch of Civic Type R's out because it would be such a jump for the performance of the car.
And what it,
maybe a little too much.
Maybe a little too much.
what it did, I know. But there's the one element, like there's the most important element of that race is not the pros and the amateurs or that mix. It's not my car.
Yeah.
And nobody gives a shit do to this car. Because when it's your car, you drive differently. Or when it's your team owner's car and you have to answer to somebody, you don't drive like as big an asshole. When it is not your car and you're racing, nobody cares. Nobody cares. And I've done it where guys went through like four cars in just in practice and stuff. Like they blew it up or they busted it up or they crashed at the end of shoreline. And like someone would just go to them like, well, let's get you out of that car and let's see if we can find you another car.
One.
And they're like, okay. They wouldn't yell. They wouldn't like go, what the fuck? Come on now.
I want to say that when Goldberg did the race years ago, maybe it was qualifying or something. Maybe it's during the race. Something happened. He messed up. He felt like it was his fault. He got out of the car and he was mad. And he's a big dude, just punches the side view mirror, which breaks off the car. And then he gets to the locker room and he's like, broke my hand.
Wow.
No. He just broke his hand.
Oh my God.
He's like, whatever.
But it's got to be like going indoor go-karting. It's the same way. Like people just destroy those things. Well, at least when I go.
Yeah, when you go.
Most people destroy the go-karts.
Yeah, they don't care. Thanks for listening to another episode of Going Racing. New episodes available every week on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.